rumours this week that Tharg had finally found the second outpost of humanity, the galactic escape pod that is Colonia, have proven to be only partially true. Posting on the Galweb forums, Commander Tanith sent an emergency report to the galaxy, along with a video of what appears to be a frameshift anomaly, and experienced a number of shield breach attacks before escaping to the next system. Concerned that the relative calm of Colonia was about to be disrupted and a new front opened in the Thargoid War, Hutton dispatched a news team aboard the Hutton Hotbus, courtesy of King Hanky of Colonia, to investigate the happenings. Initial station logs show that there was indeed a Thargoid near Jack's station, and it was attacking commanders that were exiting the station. In fact, there were two. But one of them was a Diamondback Explorer with a hacked ship signature. Various Thargoid and human transmissions have been passed through the Translatortron 3000, a minor upgrade over the Translatortron 2000, as the new version understands Ouija, and we've pieced together the series of events leading up to this panic. An unknown commander, whether it be a prankster or panic-inducing member of the Just Stop Tritium Eco-Terrorist Brigade, had hacked their ship transponder so that they identified as a Thargoid. System and nearby shipboard systems immediately identified the Diamondback as an anomaly and sent alerts to nearby stations, who promptly changed the music from elevator to, "Oh my God, we're all gonna die!" What the unknown commander hadn't reckoned with was on which space, which connects all points in the universe together by big portals, and when Tharg the Mighty's mighty communication monitoring team detected a Thargoid in distress, immediately opened a portal to the nearest maelstrom, which of course was an awfully long way away. Which space being which space, though, the rescue team took no time at all. The Diamondback, still broadcasting its identity as identifies as a basilisk despite looking like a classic metrosexual Diamondback Explorer, immediately became the focus of an incoming Thargoid scout ship, which, not knowing any better, decided the wayward Diamondback was either one of Tharg the Mighty's mighty baby minions, or just a very confused teenage Thargoid. So it attempted to scoop it up to take it back home to Mum, or Dad, we're still not sure. Anyway, whoever it was who perpetrated the impersonation was taken away, back through a witch space tunnel, and is probably being force-fed meta-alloy soup and put to bed. This is a reminder to all pilots. Please do not tweak your ship transponder to appear as something you're not, especially if that something attracts anti-Xeno wings, Thargoid response units, and ends up with you getting a probation from the humans or bedtime songs from Tharg the Mighty. Your eardrums just are not equipped for that, and you don't want to know at all what happens when Tharg tries to change your nappy.
Hutton orbital truckers are known for leaping to the rescue when any distress call is received, no matter what the distance, no matter what the danger. Which is of course what happened this week when Flossie received a panic call from one Commander Andram. Well, she didn't, Snuggles McKeague did, but he relayed it on all channels. Message read as follows. Looking for a mad lad with a fleet carrier, I did a cardinal sin. I left a bubble without a mug. I was wondering if anyone has a fleet carrier coming to Sag A and would be willing to drop off a mug to me. You will have my forever gratitude. Remember, don't be like me. Grab your mug before you leave. Now, being neither a lad nor mad, well, not yet. Flossie ignored the message, but, looking at the map and the peril of a trucker in a bit of a situation, stuck her virtual hand up and leaped into action. Flossie's transcript reads as follows.
I confirmed that I, Flossie Chu, had a carrier at EL Procol Centauri, orbiting Hutton Moon, and later that day asked if a mug was still needed. He replied he did on 10th of July. Realising Andron was still somewhere from Sagittarius A, I did wonder if the commander who was apparently there already with a hold full of mugs might be in a better position to supply one. I didn't think there would be a need for a carrier anyway, as it could all be done with collector limpets. I went away to play Beat Saber and suddenly felt extremely mean. I realised I'd often flown further than that to throw some fuel limpets at somebody, so surely I could do the same with a mug. Only instead of flying all the way, I could take my carrier. It I wasn't sure if I had enough tritium, but I decided I could always mine it if I needed any more.
Mia, you're being seamless.
Well, at this point, I'll step in. Anyway, having beaten up half the galaxy in Beat Saber and realised there was probably enough tritium in a carrier, Flossie decided the most truckerish thing to do would be to help, given that the commander had been without a hut and mug for at least 2 days and was at risk from mods. Her next update to Hutton HQ reads...
The idea at the time was that I would make my way towards his location and hope he would also head towards me so that we could meet in the middle somewhere. Andron told me he was at Hypofly XF-MD8-115-20 and said he did not have collector limpets. Oh well, I hoped he was good at manual scooping, or maybe we could land on a planet. I initiated the first jump in his direction shortly after 6 p.m. that evening and got as far as Kylorb's DNWC-17-2910 before logging out for the night shortly after 1 a.m. I had not heard any more from Andron and noted he was still in the same system by the squad membership information. He did message me that he was going to try to work his way to me that night. By now I realised I would not make it any much further as my tritium was extremely low, but would get as far as I could and kept updating my location on Discord.
Whereupon she realised that Andron hadn't moved. Had they been struck down with mods? Were aliens aboard their ship doing unspeakable things to them, without the aid of a hut and mug for protection? However, Flossie being Flossie, she decided to stay put, and of course ensure that in her enthusiasm, she hadn't bitten off more than she could chew. Next transmission follows.
At that point, I said I would stay where I was until I had mined enough tritium to get back to Colonia, which would hopefully give him a chance to reach me in the meantime. There was a ring in the system I was in, but I went in search for some better ones. Finding a decent icy ring in a system close by, I remotely jumped the carrier to give it to me and gave the new location on Discord, Dryoi Prue XX-BC29-1505. By now, I was really regretting my decision to do this journey, especially as it seemed I was the only one doing the travelling and wondered what had possessed me. Then I got a message from Dead Meat GF asking where I was and saying he may bring a fleet carrier with tritium to me. I really didn't want to inconvenience anyone, having got myself into this mess and deciding I should get myself out of it. However, he told me, I prefer to think of it as something fun to do. So why would I stop him? After all, I had thought delivering a mug would be a fun thing to do, but wasn't anticipating that the person wanting it wouldn't move in the meantime. I used Spanish to plot my return route and get an idea of how much tritium I would need, only realising later that as tritium was added, the heavier the carrier got and the more would be needed to complete the route. Initially, I thought I was looking at 963 tonnes, which would mean me filling the anaconda I was using for mining 5 times.
Meanwhile, nothing had been heard from Andron. Were they drifting, mugless and desperate? Or were they a dastardly do-wrong intended on leading truckers astray, the siren of legend luring radio presenters to their doom?
Next day, I was told that Chucklefook, one of Dead Meat's clones, was on the way to me. He had spent the evening buying a carrier, filling up with tritium and hoping to arrive with enough to get us both to a half-decent supply. He had bookmarked a route and was working his way to me between jobs at work. It's been a fun distraction between jobs and we're about halfway now, he said. As there was no radio show that Thursday last week, due to a shortage of presenters and button pushers, I went out to make a start on the tritium mining, but progress was slow and I didn't get much. Later the next day, I found the fairies had been. I suddenly had a lot more tritium and a message from Deadmeat GF saying he had sold me a cutterful. A few more followed so that I had more than enough to get back to Colonia. On Friday afternoon, Andron sent a message on Discord. I'm way behind. This week is bad for me. If I miss the boat, it's understandable. I decided to remain where I was at least over the weekend in case he had some time off work then. Not wanting to use the tritium I now had on going any further, I decided to fly towards his system in my Asp-X, as it was only 35 jumps away, and arrived there shortly before 1:30 a.m. on Monday morning. I landed on the planet and was going to wait until he had a chance to get online sometime.
Sounds like wishful thinking to us, but as there was plenty of crochet to do, tritium to mine, and of course biological things to poke with an isonator, who are we to judge?
On Monday evening, I realised I did not yet have the system map, so took off to use the FSS and also use the DSS on the planet before going into land again. I'd had a few problems with my wireless connection dropping fairly frequently, and I can't remember if I disconnected before landing or if I did manage to land, but when I logged back in, my ship was floating, pointing nose down to the planet. I continued to move down to the surface, remembering the gravity was a little high and trying to approach carefully.
At this point, Flossie decided that the system was looking entirely too untidy for a rendezvous, and, in typical style, decided to give it a bit of a spring clean, which involved moving the moon's orbit, flattening a nearby mountain, and using her ship to scrape up all the piles of dust lying around on the surface.
Not sure what went wrong, but next thing I knew, my ship crashed onto the surface, exploded, and I lost all the cartographic data I'd collected on the way, as well as the small supply of 5 mugs and 5 gin I had with me. I took the rebuy and was redeployed at Surly's Rest in Rodentia. So there I was in Rodentia, my carrier was still in the middle of nowhere, and Andron was still in the same system as when I first started. I sent Andron a direct message in Discord, explaining what had happened, and if he wanted a mug, he would have to come to Colonia for it. Meanwhile, I would have to remotely move the carrier back, and then meet it at the point it ran off to tritium to transfer more.
Of course, at this point, most commanders would have given up, gone home, and wished Andron good luck, maybe with 2 fingers, or a big moon at the front of the ship, but not Flossie.
I then got a reply from Andron. I'm sorry, my week has been insane. No downtime. I owe you a huge one. I got called out all weekend for a major PC outage. I do appreciate the effort though, and I do owe you a huge one. Once again, I felt bad and made the decision to fly out to the carrier and either wait there again or fly onto his system again. Only this time, find a planet possibly in a neighbouring system with a lower gravity and possibly a nice atmosphere. Currently 50 jumps remaining to reach the carrier, and we'll see how things are after that.
Base madness isn't a symptom of mods, is it?
Next day I did the final 50 jumps and thought I might as well carry on, after picking up more mugs to take. On arrival, I flew to another system just over a light year away and found a planet with atmosphere to land on, also with 5 biological signals to find. I let Andron know where I was, and last night, Wednesday, he was able to get online. Winged up and we met up on the planet. I've dropped 2 mugs so he'd have a spare. He then took off and I stayed there, intending to explore the biologicals the next day.
Whereupon Flossie was attacked by a rabid funicular and had to use the emergency medical kit stored in her asp.
I'm glad we're finally able to meet up, even if it did cost me a rebuy on my aspects and meant me making the journey twice, second time entirely by ship. But it was worth it in the end when Andron took off, really happy and grateful. He said he wanted a mad lad in his original request and ended up with a mad lady. Would I do it again? Yes, of course I would.
Back at Fort Mug, a supply of really good drugs, some soft music, and of course a big medal await Commander Flossie. After all, that's what truckers do, right?
After 50 weeks, or 11 and a half long months, the too hot, too messy event, the Hutton-led initiative to deliver a Hutton Mug and Centauri Migogen to all the stations of the galaxy has recorded almost 85,000 deliveries. Weekly numbers have been down for a couple of weeks, with less than 1,000 mugs delivered last week, and the four-weekly average has dropped to around 1,100 deliveries a week. Two new commanders joined in the effort in the last couple of weeks, taking the numbers signed up to 294, who were spread across 96 squadrons. Hutton still has the largest contingent with 93 commanders, who have delivered collectively almost 46,000 mugs. The Buckyball Racing Club are in second place, having chalked up their 5,000th mug. The Winged Hussars are static in third on 3150, but haven't added any mugs to their total in a month. The Paladins are in fourth, closing on 2,000. The Order of 12 of over 1,600 in fifth, and the Anti-Xeno Initiative have continued their push to take sixth from the Burr Pit, who are now seventh. Also continuing their push are Elite Dangerous NZ, who have moved up two places into eighth, pushing the Soteria Accordant to ninth and the Undead into tenth. Membership of the 1,000 Club remains at 10 squadrons. Commander Chix is still leading the deliveries table with over 13,000 mugs delivered. Waller 81 is second with over 10,900 deliveries, ahead of Nem in third with 6,500. Shea Blackwood is in fourth with over 4,900, ahead of Infinite Dreamer in fifth, who is closing on 3,100 mugs. Talkie Mouse is in sixth, ahead of LDSK in seventh, and Border Reaver is established in eighth place, and Sinister Hedgehog has moved ahead of Risa Lang to take ninth. Dart Virtual is the 14th member of the 1000 Club, but hasn't added any more to their total. Of course, we know all this because it's tracked live in the Too Hot, Too Messy event page in the Hutton Helper. There's also a chance to win a real-world, not a rip-off from Redbubble, ballistically delivered dishwasher-safe self-cleaning, so that you don't have to, Hutton mug. Any commander that delivers 10 mugs and gin in the weekly Thursday to Thursday period will be entered into next week's draw to win a real Hutton mug, unless, of course, you already have one. 49 lucky commanders have accomplished this so far, and you can see a little golden mug next to their names in the top commanders table. The previous 2 weeks' mug winners were Devantjar and M. Grey, so keep listening for this week's winner to be announced in the banter pit after the news. If you delivered 10 mugs and gin in every week since the start 11 months ago, you'd have racked up at least 500 deliveries, and only 27 or 1 in 11 of signed up commanders have achieved this. If you haven't, why not give it a try and share the burden for the next 4 years. In order to join in the fun, you'll need to sign up by downloading the Hutton Helper from hot.forthemug.com/download, and then your mug and gin deliveries will be automatically registered for you by Entarius's organic, non-GMO, soya-fed, low-cholesterol replicant hamsters, which might not be able to pass a Voigt camp test, hey, but using their very special set of skills, they will hunt you down, and they will find you.
Hutton Orbital is known for its love of four-legged friends, the kind with a fluffy belly, loving attitude, and cute paws. And with Amelia's penchant for finding the galaxy's most rare things, it's no wonder that the combination of the Galnet Race Digest and her innate truckerishness led to this week's panic attack at the station. Searching through the old worlds of populated space using a space trader's guide that's over 30 years old, Amelia found reference to a world that sported fat black felines. Being a cat person, it was impossible to ignore, and after the digital equivalent of astroarchaeology, and more than a little complex problem solving, which included some trigonometry, some quantum theory, and a little bit of guesswork, Amelia landed on the planet in search of her very own fat black feline. Only to discover that the planet might have been known for the fat black variety of cat, but in reality the settlers worshipped all kinds of cat. Hairy ones, hairless ones, big ones, small ones, ones that make purring noises. If you can say psst, psst at it and end up looking like you've been self-harming in the forearm department after the friendly encounter, this world has them. And of course, they're rare. All of them. The Dysoan one-eyed bald cat, the striped Tianisla feral cat, the serval cat from Earth, they've got them all. So, looking through the catalogue of potential rescues from the cat orphanage and adoption centre there, she picked a lovely Bengal kitten, Mooncake. Definitely not the Destroyer of Worlds. A cutie little thing with cream fur, with stripes, that spends 90% of its time asleep. Wait 4 weeks, and in a day of excitement over at the orbital, Mooncake arrived. It turns out that there was a little bit of a mix-up. Mooncake isn't a Bengal cat. Well, she is. Technically. If by cat you mean tiger. Yep, Amelia had intended walking her on a lead. Yep, she'd bought a litter box. Nope, neither of them are large enough. Neither are her quarters, neither are the food supplies. The Momus Bog Spaniel Detachment have filed Mooncake not under bark a lot when she sits by your window grooming herself, and instead put her in the category of nope. Mooncake, meanwhile, hasn't realised that she's not as tiny as she thinks she is, and has taken to sleeping on people's laps in the bar. They don't dare move. They've seen the size of those claws. If you visit the orbital and are approached by a Bengal tiger, remember the safe word. It's chukity. Otherwise, you might just find out what Mooncake, Destroyer of Worlds, does if she's unhappy.
Good evening, trackers. Atrus 5060 reporting in with the latest updates on the Thargoid War. After weeks of successes for humanity at keeping the Thargoids at bay, yay, or maybe time, leaving us with nothing but alerts this week. Amazing work again done by our illustrious Hackswing pilots. Aren't they lovely? Helping the Mode Alliance, or maybe MODE, and fellow Axe, or maybe AX squadrons keep the Thargoids at bay, clearing all of last week's alerts. Many systems have also been reclaimed from the Thargoids, showing how well humanity was adapted to the new Thargoid tactics and ships, those nasty little glaives. Humanity can rest a little easier every week, knowing the threat the Thargoids pose is now being kept in check, and the effectiveness of humanity's strategy is giving the AX and the Axe communities the lift it needs after this nearly 8-month-long war. My goodness. I'd like to introduce a new segment to my updates in which we profile a member of the MODE, or possibly Mode Alliance, for which Hutton has been proud to be part of. We'll learn about their history and how they've been fighting and adapting to the war with the Thargoids. This week, I have the distinct honour to be introducing you to PDES, or possibly PDs. The Post-Disaster Evacuation Service, PDES or PDs, is a dedicated rescue squad founded in May 3305. Goodness, that feels like a long time ago, by Squadron Leader Nimmo. I wonder if his first name's Derek. Anyway, circumstances left him unable to run the squad he created, and the responsibility fell to Coordinator Phil P. Or is that P-H-I-L-L-P? I can't remember. Anyway, he's been the squad's de facto leader ever since. Lovely, lovely person. The squad has played a part in every Thargoid and terrorist attack from the time of its formation, rescuing passengers from burning stations in ships engineered for capacity and, of course, cool running. When fleet carriers became available, the squad embraced them, gave them a lovely hug for the ability to store ships and equipment that could be rapidly transported to invasions. Although Thargoid attacks varied in their intensity, well, sometimes they're rubbish and sometimes they're really rubbish. Anyway, I digress. They did not deviate from the hit-and-run approach until the maelstroms arrived. This completely changed our logistics. We were no longer evacuating to rescue ships in the same system. Our ships had to be capable of transporting refugees up to and over 200 light years away, which required a complete rework of our fleets, probably with extra toilet capacities. Anyway, for the first time, Thargoids were not just invading human space, but occupying hundreds of systems, which changed our whole approach. Already occupied territory poses an extra risk when travelling. Nasty Thargoids, eh? With hard predictions automatically hostile and Thargoids gaining the ability to interdict, it adds a new dimension of danger for ships that are largely unarmed. Tactics for dealing with or evading them had to be discovered. With the previous attacks, the various jobs involved were more separated. A bit like my vocal cords right now. We and others had rescued passengers while the AX or possibly X pilots fought Thargoids and a delivery squad to be waiting for the invasion to be repelled before going in to repair the damage with spanners. Now we combine our efforts simultaneously and are more coordinated with more communication between us. Previously, only large stations were attacked, but now all ports are at risk. Sounds dangerous to me, which has caused some of us to have different ships engineered depending on landing pad size and distance. Other changes to how we work include new jobs, like mopping up afterwards, salvaging, tissue sampling, picking up all the dirty tissues and restoring power to settlements in Thargoid-controlled systems, which again require modification and engineering. Some of us are fighting Thargoids now, even if it's only scouts and revenants. I remember when scouts were terrifying, but now it's only scouts now, while others are going further and fighting interceptors. Those are bigger. Our strategies evolved from initially saving what we could as we've learned more about how the Thargoids expand and attack. Without that knowledge, we could not develop a wider strategy than simply doing the job in front of us. You always do the job in front of you. Now we have a long-term plan. Now, while the AX or possibly AXE pilots fight to reclaim territory that was taken from us, we're stopping alerts and invasions from becoming new Thargoid territory. So between us, we curtail the expansion at both ends. Sounds kinky. As we are a non-combative squad, some may ask why this is so. Why are we so invested in the war beyond our rescue operations, concerning ourselves with strategies beyond our mission statement and working with AXE or AX and delivery squads? The answer is simple. For almost 5 years, we've been waiting for the war to go somewhere, as opposed to the game of galactic ping pong. If you listen to the wrong people, it's also whiff waff. Anyway, it's been so far with neither side getting anywhere. Whatever the reason for the Thargoid occupation of so much human territory, maybe they're looking for the Centauri Megajin. Anyway, it represents a situation moving on. If not to a resolution, then to whatever the next stage is. What a lovely introduction to an amazing squadron. Please listen in next week as we destroy Vantaean's vocal cords with an enormous section in the news by Atrus 5060 and, of course, introduce another member of the Mode Alliance. Back to business. X-Wing, or maybe HAX-Wing, your orders for this week will be to prevent the invasions of the following systems. HIP 19157, HIP 20890, HIP 20527, that's an awful lot of HIP. HIP 20899 and HIP 20491. I hope you were taking notes. Anyway, FTM Haxcom is located in the HIP 18843 system to help in the defence of HIP 19157. Let's get out there and show the Thargoids there's no place for them in human space. For the mug.
Much like weeks of late, you could argue that there is bugger all of much interest going on in Hutton space. But then where have you been, you fool? There are all sorts of nonsenses going on. 8 systems are on the naughty step, and we have 2 systems on the bink. One very thirsty and another one feeling, well, a bit ick. More on those stories coming up. Lining itself up to snaffle another station, 36 Ofiuki has not just lowered itself to 30 to claim this week's wooden spoon, but is also making cow eyes and shouting, "Hail! Hail!" hoping that the Sol Workers' Party will be lured into another war and receive another good drubbing in return, before barfing up another starport to Hutton. Truckers are asked not to go playing gooseberry. We have to go a whole 4 points to 34 to find our second-to-last system, Ross 671, where 2 wars are locking up the next 4th-placed factions and with it half of the system's influence. Infrequent visitors of the Zone of Shame, Haghole is joined on 37 by a run of poor form, LP525-39, where an election between 2nd and 3rd is locking up a 3rd of system influence. Having finally stalled in its point of weak upward trend, notoriously hard to move, Epsilon India's finally succumbed to altitude sickness on 38, where the system is now acclimatising before considering its options. Finally, 3 systems, Stein 2051, Epsilon Eridani, and Hilparsai are keeping each other company and perched on the very edge of the naughty step on 39. And you'll have noticed that none of them are Barnard's star. Epsilon Eridani also has an outbreak, so ship medicines into the large pads and make sure that you play your part in holding the system's health services to ransom. We have an infrastructure failure in both Wolf 359 and PSPF-LF2, and if you want to help out and make a killing, prioritise Wolf 359 when you deliver your water purifiers, power generators and food supplies. The failure in Alpha Centauri was cleared during the week. The gin must flow. Barnard Star couldn't quite get itself into a very crowded naughty step this week, but parched throats earn it a mention, as a drought is in effect. Its largest utility supplier finds itself billions in debt, and its chief executive has tried to solve the matter by paying themselves a massive bonus and then quitting to spend more time with their pension and share options before moving to Epsilon Indy, where the oceans aren't full of untreated sewage. Ship in water supplies to prevent an appearance in the Zone of Concern next week. At the overachieving end of the Hutton systems table, we have no fewer than 7 systems on or above 60%, one of which is over 70. So priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, and yes, of course you do, yes you do, relieve the infrastructure failures in Wolf 359 and PSPF-LF2, relieve the outbreak in Epsilon Eridani, and relieve the drought in Barnard Star.